It's Love 4 o'clock. Radio.
Hello and good afternoon. We'd like to welcome everybody to On Point with your co-host, Don Allen. That's me and Mr. Ron Edwards. Hey, Mr. Edwards, how are you?
Good afternoon, Mr. Allen. A beautiful day here in the Twin Cities. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I was just kind of getting into detail here. I know that we have some international news going on and some things happen international, so why don't we just dig right in?
All right. First of all, welcome to our both domestic and international audiences, and a couple of guests that we have holding for online conversation. Big news out of Washington, out of London, out of Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. At least two package bombs were recovered on a UPS flight and a FedEx flight, one in Dubai and the other one at a airport in central England. Apparently the situation was tense enough that President Barack Obama personally made the announcement to the nation. Normally that's something left to the Homeland Security Director, if you will, or in this case Homeland Security Secretary, or the Secretary of Defense, or maybe the Secretary of State. But an election year, I imagine, because President Obama is damned if he does, damned if he doesn't, it didn't make any difference. If he hadn't made the call, they said he was irresponsible and insensitive. He did make the call, and, you know, folks are talking about why did he do it as opposed to Homeland Security. But anyways, the FBI and others are saying, British MI6, MI5, et cetera, saying as many as 13 additional package bombs are somewhere in the world, if you will. The two bombs that were intercepted in London and coming out of Yemen and in Dubai were slated, allegedly, according to the sources, to a synagogue or two synagogues in Chicago. And I really don't see anybody at a synagogue quickly and without security opening a package from Yemen. You know what I'm saying? Anywhere in the Middle East. But anyways, it's big news. It could have been a test by Al-Qaeda on the Arab Peninsula or the Adrian Peninsula or whatever, however they want to reference it. So it's been getting a lot of analysis, if you will, diagnostic, if you will, trying to figure out if this is a part of a escalation in attacks against the homeland. So everyone is kind of keeping their eye on that situation on the international scene. I think we'll hear a lot of it tomorrow on the morning talk shows, okay?
Yes.
The other piece that we have, and actually we covered this about 48 hours before the jury came in with the verdict. We have had a landmark decision out of the federal courts on early Monday, a federal jury sitting here in Minnesota that was hearing the matter of the heirs and children of Dominic Felder, African-American, shot and killed by police here on the 20th of September, 2006. We wrote about that in our column of September 27, 2006, and January 3, 2007. We specifically indicated the spokesman recorder of Minnesota was out in front on this with no one else to touch it, but we indicated that it had been an execution. A jury concurred and awarded $1.8 million to the survivors and heirs of Dominic Felder. And that, by the way, Mr. Allen, is the largest settlement in a single situation to a single person in the history of the state district courts or federal district courts in the state of Minnesota. The only one larger than that to a person of color was to the late police officer Dewey Noe, who was shot by his own colleagues, who was awarded $4.2 million. So we've not seen a lot of discussion. We noticed that, though the Star Tribune did carry a front-page story above the fold, the electronic media, people like Reggie Chapman and them at CCO, no one seemed to touch it, which, you know, certainly raises a question about transparency as it pertains to justice. But anyways, the Dominic Felder Award, as we said before, the largest single award by a jury, either state or federal, to a African American in the history of the federal or state court, $1.8 million. And our prayers and certainly go out to the to his two lovely daughters and to his mother, that they were able to hold the course and to prevail. As we said before, he was shot and killed in the middle of the street by two officers firing a total of 8 shots into his body on September 20th, 2006. Okay. Let's move it on, Mr. Allen.
Well, yeah, Mr. Edwards, I would just like, speaking of Dominic Felter, and condolences again to his family, we have to look at Mr. Felter and also Mr. David Cornelius Smith, who was tased to death on the 6th floor of the downtown YMCA, and then also Q the Blacksmith, Quincy Smith, former KMLJ DJ that was tased to death also.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I have not seen or heard any of the community so-called spokespersons come forward and talk about this in a or convene a forum or a some kind of gathering to talk about this, kind of heal the community or start the healing process. And this has been an ongoing trend. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you're absolutely correct, Mr. Allen. In fact, I found it rather interesting, the panel at this morning's so-called town hall meeting entitled Violence in the North Community. As I watched the panelists, of course, two of the panelists were from outside the state of Minnesota, one from the University of Indiana, the other one from Chicago State University. But there were two individuals there that are affiliated with the Institute for Violent Domestic in the African American Community. And I'm like you, as I sat there this morning and I was there from start to finish, I was trying to remember when I saw any of these two particular principals step forward, be interviewed, or in fact talk in terms through their institution, which is well-funded, for a town hall meeting or just a general meeting to allow the community to express its heartache, to vent, and et cetera. And I think your point is very, very compelling. I know it's self-serving for us as bloggers to say that, but the fact of the matter is, in the case of Quincy Smith, in the case of Dominic Felter, in the case of David Cornelius Smith, just three that you know you can talk about in, as pertains to recent memory, though there have been a number of assaults and beatings of African Americans. Ira Safford, by the way, comes to come to mind, and that case is getting ready to go to federal trial in about a month and a half. I'm puzzled by what I saw this morning, Mr. Allen.
Yes.
With respect to the experts, and then there was another group of individuals led by the Right Reverend Bishop Howell of Shiloh International Ministries, who was going to, we were expecting him to honor his commitment last week on these programs,
yes,
live, that he was going to join us and talk a little bit about what happened this morning. Unfortunately, you've just advised me, because I've just returned from another meeting as I arrived here in studio, that he has now withdrawn his commitment and is indicating he will not be talking to us under, I guess, any circumstances.
that's exactly right, Mr. Edwards, because I had talked to him at the forum or town hall meeting this morning, and he said he's not going to be coming on. And I would just like for our international and national listeners, and we have a special guest, Ms. Sarah Walker, on hold here waiting to join this conversation, and we're going to get her thoughts and opinions. But for full disclosure and transparency, we actually promoted him being on the air with us today on the blogs and on electronic media, because last week's show, live on the air, he did say that he'd be glad to come on and talk about, you know, whatever it is we wanted to talk about.
In fact, I'll tell you what, for our listening audience, both domestic and international, that was at exactly 5:23 Central Standard Time. The good bishop indicated that he had no problem speaking to the report, a report in which, of course, I was quoted in the Minneapolis Star Tribune this morning as indicating is at best extremely outdated, and I think that was further proved by what we see. But, you know, we don't want to, quote-unquote, beat an ecumenical horse, if you will, but the fact of the matter is I'm greatly disappointed after the good bishop had indicated he had no problem of coming on and speaking live to the masses.
Okay, and I also want to let our listeners know we're broadcasting live from downtown Minneapolis in the McIntosh Studios. The call-in number today is 1-347 426-3904. Again, if you want to call and you have a question, concern, comment, suggestion, that is 1-347-426-3904. That is a toll-free call, so it will not raise your cell phone bill. But now...
Let me just ask a question, Mr. Allen. Now, what has happened to our 877-572-4288 number?
We have condensed the numbers, and that number...
Excellent. Okay, yeah. Because I'm holding on that line for some calls. Got you. Okay, we're in good shape.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, if they call that line, it will go right to the other line. But
all right, beautiful. To our switchboard. Okay.
Yeah, to our switchboard. Yes, exactly. It is still live. It's not off, but, you know, we just decided that for convenience sake, just to give out one number for everybody. So.
Okay.
Yes. Do you want to ask me that question about the confrontation this morning, Mr. Edwards? And then we'll go on and bring our guests on as soon as I ask.
Yes, I do. I was aware that at the time that you, as a member of the media, were photographing the dais at approximately 11:10, because we didn't start until about 11:17. I noticed that there was some discomfort on the part of the moderator, a Mr. McFarlane, as well as the head of the North Point Medical Center. And a little bit later, I noticed that a Hennepin County Deputy Sheriff, African-American Sergeant, was approaching you, and it was obvious to me that he was indicating to you that there was some concern about you specifically exercising your rights as a journalist?
Oh, yes. It's fortunate enough for me that I know this particular Hennepin County Sheriff personally, Sergeant.
Okay.
And I told him that I would not use his name over the airways. I will respect that as a personal friend.
Okay.
I will not use his name, but he understands what it is fully. I had went up to the panel with my camera on live. I have a YouTube video up on at YouTube, and you go to IBNNORG channel, and you could see me. I asked the two panelists that were sitting up there, when was the first homicide in North Minneapolis?
Yeah.
And neither one of them had an answer. Immediately after, Al McFarlane went to each of the panelists and said, you know, I shouldn't answer his questions. He's not with the media. He has no credibility. And
but you are. You're certified as a journalist nationally and internationally. I'm not. Why would he give that kind of misrepresentation?
well, you know, this is one thing. The officer said that Mr. Al McFarlane from Insight News and also Stella Whitney West approached him and said that I was causing trouble, that I can't interview any of the people beyond the panel. And I said, you know, you don't tell that to the white media when they come in.
Certainly,
you know,
they do.
So,
yeah.
So, but anyway, Ms. Edwards, we also have, we're very proud to have Ms. Sarah Walker here on the air live with us. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about you and tell our listeners, international and national, give websites, phone numbers, whatever you have to do, and then let's go into the conversation.
Sure. Well, since it's an international radio station, I'll begin by saying I'm actually from Zambia. And we came to the United States when I was about 4 years old. But since, for my entire adult life, I've worked on issues of justice reform. I am the chief operating officer at 180 Degrees, which works with men coming out of prison and juvenile offenders. And we serve about 3,500 youth and adults in Hennepin and Ramsey County, a large portion of those in North Minneapolis. And I also am the founder of the Minnesota Second Chance Coalition that lobbies for justice reform at the Capitol. And this year, amongst other things, we'll be taking on felony disenfranchisement for individuals who live in the community and pay taxes but are denied the right to vote.
Wow, that's a lot. And
that is a full menu. That is a full menu.
And Mr. Edwards, you know, as I always say, I take a really close look at a lot of the agencies here in town that do this type of work, and I kind of secretly follow Ms. Walker on Facebook and other arenas, unbeknownst to her. But I can honestly say this is one of the agencies that we should support and make sure if they have a message, assist them in getting it out, because they do hard work and they actually engage the people.
Okay.
So,
all right, then.
Well, I very much appreciate that, and I do think it's the responsibility of agencies to go to where the community is at and to make sure that when we're lobbying for issues that their voice is being heard. But So it's just it's important work, and I think it's actually the future of the black community is partially dependent on making sure we have reforms in our justice system, and it's the only way to reduce the violence, I think, also.
Yeah, well, Ms. Walker, what are your thoughts on this morning's town hall meeting at Shiloh International Church?
Well, I guess I will begin by saying that, you know, having moved here from somewhere else, I am always disappointed at how much infighting there is within communities of color, and that I try to support all efforts that are addressing any sort of community issue. But I will say I was a little disappointed by the lack of new information given. In fact, I would say very old information. There seems to be a lot more current information that could be provided, and I also didn't feel like there was any solutions offered. I feel like many forums, and I mean, I've certainly been guilty of this myself, point to a lot of problems but don't really offer any solution or any new approach.
Okay. Also today, one of the things, speaking about the content and the information that they were given out, Professor Esther Jenkins went through some stats, and I don't know if you pay close attention to that, but I also have that video up online. I mean, we've been hearing this stuff year after year after year, but if there was a solution, I mean, wouldn't you think that one of the solutions would be some economic development, some jobs and some employment in those areas of blighted areas of maybe North Minneapolis or South Minneapolis or the Twin Cities?
Well, I do think so, and I think to me there are some pretty major statistics that have come out very recently, which I would have included in the report, which one is that in 1980, 10% of individuals who graduated or African-American young men who didn't graduate from high school went to prison, and today that number is about 40%. And to me that's pretty shocking and pretty relevant, especially to the north side where, as you know, Minnesota has the highest educational disparity in the country. We also have the fourth highest number of people on probation. And to me there's obviously a link between both the violence, the community disorganization, as they called it, and the number of people reentering from prison and living in the community with criminal records. And I think one of the things you have to do is address the fact that people need jobs in the community, and that until you do that, you know, everyone who goes to prison or gets a criminal record, they aren't just one individual. They are attached to an entire family network and an entire community, and that requires addressing, to me, definitely economic development and making sure that people have job opportunities. And there has to be a link to the fact that we were just rated number one for racial disparities in unemployment in the nation. We're higher than Detroit.
Yes.
But by the way, if I could, Ms. Walker, did you kind of get the impression this morning when there was a very brief touching on the economic assistance, did you have a feeling that none of those four panelists knew about that report from the Institute on Economic Reporting that came out on June 6th?
I think, well, I would say that it's noticeable that it's absent. It was noticeable. I mean, to me, I would have addressed both the educational disparities report that came out, I think, about a year ago, the employment disparities report, and then made some of those links between what happens to people who don't have education and employment opportunities. We also know that every time that someone has contact with the justice system, that their earnings over the life course diminish significantly. So you're making it almost a permanent punishment for them. And I think that if you grow up in if you do the statistics, there's 230,000 black people in Minnesota, and of those 50,000 are actually African immigrants. So if you just look at the African American population, who are the majority who are in prison and participating in the violence, it probably indicates that one in five African Americans in North Minneapolis are at some point in the justice system. And I just don't see how you can have strong communities then.
On that particular point, I also found it rather interesting, Mr. Allen, Ms. Walker, that we had a sudden introduction of Operation Ceasefire. And I was talking to some associates who joined me there in the back of the room, and I was saying to them, and I say it now, that, you know, this quote-unquote town hall meeting probably should have taken place at least 2 months before the announcement of Operation Ceasefire out of Chicago, because it certainly would have helped part the waters to give us a better understanding about the need for Operation Ceasefire, which, of course, only functions after a calamity. But, I found it rather puzzling and amusing because later on in this program I'm going to talk, Mr. Allen and myself will talk in terms of a very interesting panel that Mayor Archie Ryback put together in 2006 with a specific mission to deal with mental health. May I ask you this question? Had the four panelists, the Oliver Williams and William Oliver, Ms. Jenkins and Mr. Pope, have you, because you have quite the credentials, have you ever had an opportunity to interact with them and at any level?
I do know Oliver Williams, and I actually know him from very early in my academic career. I met him at a fellowship, and I will tell you this, he was a very thoughtful person to me at the time and was very encouraging of a young African-American woman going to try to work on her PhD. So I think that's my major impression. I'm aware of his work in domestic violence in the African-American community, but his work primarily focuses on services, not on policy solutions. And I'm a big believer that while we absolutely do need services in the community, you can't – basically what's happened now is our policies don't support the expected outcomes that we're supposed to be achieving through services. And so without that, I mean, I just believe why I do both policy and direct service work is because one without the other doesn't really get you very far.
Okay. I mean, excellent point, very compelling. Mr. Allen, I'll drop it back to you. I have a couple other questions, but Mr. Allen and I kind of rotated. Mr. Allen?
Yeah, someone just left in the chat room that crime is actually at a 30-year low, but it's still too high. Someone by the code name of Double Up. And again, we're going to invite callers to call at 1-347-426-3924. And if the Honorable Bishop Powell, or Editor-in-Chief of Insight News, Mr. Al McFarland is listening, or one of those that we're at the forum, we gladly invite you to call in and pose your questions on this platform.
And by the way, on that particular note, again, for our domestic and international audiences, we also extended an invitation to Professor Jenkins of Chicago State University, who was one of the panelists, and that was done on Tuesday and Wednesday by my associate, Mr. Allen. And
yes.
So we've done everything we can to, have a balanced, if you will, response and debate and equal time and all those kinds of things, even though we here on Blog Radio are really not obligated under the rules to do that.
Exactly. Now, I did receive an email, just one second here, from Ms. Stella Whitney West, which basically said, thank you for your interest in the North Minneapolis Community Violence Court. I'm not sure that you've had a chance to read the entire report, but the report clearly identifies poverty, chronic unemployment, and denied equal access and opportunity, the major factors in community and violence. This goes on to say that.
Well, let me ask this question within a kind of our guest, Ms. Walker.
Yes.
Ms. Walker,
yep.
are you aware, by the way, that we are the recipients in the last 48 hours that we, quote unquote, the African American community, primarily on the north side, are allegedly the recipients of $16 million?
For what? I am not aware.
Yes. What has happened is that for about a year, we have here at On Point have been conducting a quiet examination after we got absolute confirmation that $80 million had been awarded by a conglomeration of 22 of the most powerful foundations and lending institutions in the world, not in the United States, but in the world. There was a press conference a couple days ago in Detroit, Michigan. In fact, at the African-American Historical Museum. And the announcement was made, and five cities were selected, averaging about a little over $16 million to, quote-unquote, as the press release said, and then the headline later in USA Today said, to help, quote-unquote, the poor. And everything is working through primarily light rail corridors. And so in the case of Minneapolis, there is at least $16 million now at play, allegedly to employ our people, and I assume employ the young and a quote-unquote the old. And I was just wondering, given, again, your portfolio, were you at any point ever made aware of this golden goose?
I have not been made aware of it. It's the first I'm hearing of it. So I did not. I did not know about it. And this is to build in the light rail.
Yes, and what the manifesto says is that this is a golden opportunity. I kind of paraphrase that, but this is certainly an opportunity for significant economic uplifting, including employment contracts and et cetera, for those who are along the light rail. And we've had, seven or eight big meetings in North Minneapolis chaired by State Representative Bobby Jill Champion, in which we've been told that this great train is coming, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And we were kind of wondering, we thought, Mr. Allen and myself, the example, thought that it would come out of the $450 million that allegedly is being allocated by the Federal Department of Transportation, the state, and et cetera, out of that package. But lo and behold, this private contribution of $16 million is coming into the community, and officially it's here. It's here, and I was sitting there this morning, and I think important that our listening audience understand, and I kept waiting for the announcement from Mr. McFarland or Ms. Whitney or even one of the panelists, who are, of course, eminent researchers, I've been told, to indicate that there is a golden opportunity for us to test. Of course, as you pointed out accurately, we didn't hear anything about solutions, but, you know, Ms. Walker, Mr. Allen, I mean, I was waiting for that revelation, if you will. I know it would have made me more upbeat coming out of the meeting, because I'm like our guest. I came away not hearing anything that meant anything.
I don't know what that. I have no idea how the money is going to be distributed or what its primary use is going to be for. But I think hopefully some of it will go to making sure people on the north side are employed, and specifically people from the African American community.
Yeah.
I kind of laid a little trap there for you. And the reason was, just a week ago this past Thursday, Mr. Allen and I were in a subcommittee meeting of the, what is it, Mr. Allen, the Northside Transportation Network. And we proposed, though we ourselves didn't know about the $16 million, but we knew that something being worked on. We asked the question about the development of a community benefits agreement, which would facilitate some of those things you just said, and we were told that was all premature.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm going to go back to policy, but one of the things that I'm going to push for this year is that, so one of the problems with, even when we talk about minority employment and through contracting, is that a lot of people get excluded. I mean, and a huge percentage of African Americans based on criminal conviction. So we have to make sure that that is part of the requirement, that people can't be excluded automatically based on that alone. And then, I mean, I think the other problem is because a lot of the big money to build things is done through unions, we need to make sure that, because there's a seniority process, that there is a way for African Americans to move up in that seniority process, even if they're new to the union.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hey, stand by. We have a caller. Hello, caller. You're live on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, I'm here again on the phone. I can't hear that noise. I'll have to put y'all in now.
Hey, hello, ma'am. Hello, you're live on the air. Hello, ma'am. Hello.
I think she had to deal with the babies.
Yeah, the babies. She'll call back. Hopefully she can call back.
Okay. All right. Mr. Allen, some additional stuff, because I think that, first of all, Ms. Walker has been a very fresh voice, if you will. I got to tell you, Ms. Walker, I don't want to embarrass you. I cannot quite understand why a person of your credentials and knowledge wasn't on the panel.
Well, I appreciate that, but you know, I think it's important to have new voices, and I think there's more than one way to get the word out. I'm happy to see that at least the community is interested enough to show up. I just think we have to be respectful of the community and make sure when people come that we're offering them something to do.
Excellent.
To get involved.
Well put. All right. Mr. Allen, go ahead.
Okay, Ms. Walker, anything else you have coming up that you want people to know about, a website you want them to check out to support you or whatever thing, anything, you know, just go ahead and give the information if you have any, and if not, just keep in touch with us, but go ahead. It's your,
okay, well,
your time.
I do have something very important. On January 26th, for about the last 4 years,
it's
we've been doing a day.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We've been doing a day on the Hill, and we lobby on justice reform, so this year, our next day on the Hill will be on January 26, 2011 at 10 a.m., and that we will be addressing, we'll be trying to mandate that contractors with state agencies are required to take the question about criminal record off the application until an interview's been offered. They can't consider it, and we will also be trying to get felony voting rights back, so it's very important that people show up, and you can find us at mnsecondchancecoalition.org. So thank you guys so much.
Repeat that again, if you would. Repeat that website.
It's MN and then secondchancecoalition.org.
All right, then.
And we'll definitely put that up on the On Point site and direct our international and national listeners to that, and so they could follow up and get in touch with you. So, again, Ms. Walker, thank you very much for your time here today on Point. Mr. Edwards, closing.
Ms. Walker, I concur. Thank you. And as I said, you are a refreshing voice of knowledge.
Well, thank you so much, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful afternoon.
You too. Thanks.
Well, you know, Mr. Allen, I got to tell you, it's kind of interesting. We all know about a couple of the organizations, but it's always good to hear, as I said, tour a very refreshing perspective, if you will. And you know, some of the things she said are certainly things that some of us of the older guard have been saying for a long, long time, and it's just kind of refreshing to know that there are folks that still think along those lines. But I got to tell you, I was really disappointed in the process, if you will, that given the important role she plays within community, that she had not been made aware. This is not a criticism of her, but it's a criticism of those who are in control, that she had not been made aware that in the last 48 hours, $16 million has come into the community, $8 million for St. Paul, $8 million for Minneapolis.
Yeah, and then they planned, it says here, and I'm just looking at the official press release, leaders of the effort, the hope of the funding, about $16 million per city, will generate more funding to keep the programs alive long after the grant money dries up.
Yes, I think that was the... That was both Rip Rapson, who is the president of the Kresge Foundation outside of Detroit, as well as the chief grants aide vice president for the St. Paul Foundation. I heard those statements. I'm just trying to figure out, based on my long experience, where's the plan to make sure that these folks who allegedly were identified, I hate to use the word target, who have been identified as going to be the recipients. I agree with Ms. Walker. I doubt very much if there is going to be a plan which will incorporate any of our people, African Americans and others of color.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100% because, you know, even with the one thing that we need to talk about too is that this West Broadway Business Area Coalition in North Minneapolis, who is the fiscal agent for the $30,000 from the McKnight Foundation for the Northside Marketing or the Northside Transportation Network.
Mm-hmm.
I have called them, Mr. Edwards, on several times this week and emailed them because I wanted the information on what the grant requirements were. And the executive director, Mr. Ron Hicks, told me that, well, you have to be a board member or I have to ask somebody. And so there'd be
is he an alien? I'm not understanding what you're saying. You have to ask somebody.
Yeah.
You were asking him. He's the executive director of the West Broadway Development Association or whatever it's called. So who were you supposed to ask if you weren't to ask him?
Yeah, exactly. So I did get in touch with one of the board members there who is going to expedite that information to me. And
okay.
I'll be very appreciative of that. But it's very interesting that, you know, you have all these dollars dropping on the table and then you got the same suspect. Now, I am very, very heated behind Mr. McFarland of Insight News, Al McFarland's display of I'm trying to be respectful here, but his display of folly this morning at with the panel and the town hall meeting, because I have every right, as it does everyone else that's in the media, to interview and talk to these people. These people have put themselves in a position to be asked the hard questions, to be the targets.
Right.
And if you notice, the community is pretty tired of writing questions down on a piece of paper to give to Al McFarland to screen. And that's been going on.
Sanitized. I call it sanitized. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And so on Monday morning, I plan to addressing that on the Independent Business News Network, and addressing him and Miss Stella Whitney West from North Point on that whole situation. You know, people are a lot more advanced than they are giving the audience or the people that attended this event a lot more credit. They haven't given them any credit because, you know, 10 years ago, this town hall meeting would have been amazing, okay? It'd be like, wow, they're having a town hall meeting, or 15 years ago.
Right, but now, 15.
But now it's just kind of like, you know, this is the same old, you know, as a community elder tells me, the watermelon and chicken wing show, you know, where you come there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I hope that they didn't have fried chicken in those food boxes they gave out after the meeting. But go ahead.
And so it's very troublesome, and you're just looking at this and you're wondering, okay, what are these people doing? I mean, is this just the money grab? You know, they're asking people for their names, their address, and telephone numbers so they can collect the data and say, look, this is what we had. We had this huge meeting, and this is what's going on, and this is what we're doing, and we need more funding for this. Because as far as I'm concerned, I mean, they're positioning violence in North Minneapolis as a public health issue. Okay, that's one way to look at it. I'm going to give them that. But if you gave 2,500 to 5,000 people in North Minneapolis some kind of livable wage and maybe $15, $20 an hour, developed a program that had a job, a career job, not a short program, a career job, I think violence would just cut in half, if not, you know, all but dissipate down around 10 or 15%, where you have the petty purse snatching and, you know, the drug charges and things like that. Because
carjacking, such things. Absolutely.
Yeah. So right now there's nothing. There's no hope. There's just, and who are these? These people don't even address the masses, you know, outside of a 3 or 4 block area of Shiloh International Temple. I mean, they have their own little clique, and it's not working. I don't understand why the city granted him over $200,000. I'm talking about Bishop Richard D. Howe, how they granted, you know, this money for intervention and some avenues programs, and the pastor of the church cannot tell you where the gangs are located, who the gangs are, and what is the process. You know. So.
Well, let me say a couple things. Wanting to stay on what we have here in studio. As I said before, the microphone, I'm looking at two specific documents. One, of course, is the so-called highly touted report commissioned by whomever, talking in terms of North Minneapolis community, the violence report, which was allegedly to have been talked about in great depth. You know, I know how sensitive the issue of plagiarism is.
Yeah.
Within the academic world. And, of course, we had all academicians up there as it pertains to the four researchers, if you will, three doctors and one master's of education. What I'm troubled by, Mr. Allen, is that upon having the document forwarded to me and having then clearly understood and having drawn some of this out with respect to my comments in being interviewed yesterday by Randy First of the Mammoth Star Tribune, first of all, let us be very clear, particularly for our international and domestic audiences. This program that was held this morning to, quote-unquote, discuss this report was a report that initially was apparently commissioned sometime in 2006 at best, and there is now an admission that the data was basically no further along or any recent in 2006 than 2006. Now, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, who conducted interviews with some of the key principals, reported in a copyrighted story this morning on its front page that the report was commissioned in 2006. It was pretty much completed by 2007. It was critiqued and then officially turned over to North Point and by extension, the county. And there were a couple county commissioners there today, and three of them, in fact. Well, two of them, that's right. And I was kind of wondering how they felt about the fact that, and we cannot get explanation. We here at On Point attempted to ascertain from the director of North Point the logic and the rationale for holding in abeyance this report dealing with violence and dealing with what supposedly were solutions, as Ms. Walker eloquently pointed out. This report was not, quote-unquote, officially released until the last couple of weeks, though I was taken back at the excellent report and the quality of the report. I mean, well-done reports in sheen paper and all of that. Now, this past year, which, you know, has not ended yet, has been one of significant violence. And as Professor Jenkins pointed out, that we already knew, that the homicides alone have doubled. And by the way, we at On Point, through the National Research Institute and other entities that we are affiliated with as pertains to research, we have approached the 50 barrier. We have broken the 50 barrier of homicide. Now, to some of our listening audience, that may not seem to mean much, but on the average, over the last 20 years, we probably averaged about 61 homicides a year.
Yes.
Last year was the most significant downturn in probably 40 years because allegedly, we only had 19 homicides last year. We're now up to 50, okay? And I found it amazing that there was no real examination or logical explanation on why this increase. Okay, though one of the presenters said, well, you know, the economy's kind of gone bad, bottom dropped out. But that couldn't be reflected in this report because all the data that was acquired, accumulated, condensed, shaped, crafted, and et cetera, comes from 2006.
Exactly.
So as Ms. Walker said, there was nothing fresh here. Now, what I want to say is that I'm looking at a report issued by the National League of Cities. And we first talked about this back in early June on this program. The National League of Cities, Institute for Youth Education and Families, issued a report, and in that report was the plan by Mayor R.T. Ryback. Now, there's a piece in there at what is called Column 60 that talks about the fact that in 2006, the mayor very quietly put together the Committee of 30.
Yes.
The Committee of 30, which was the secrecy was maintained with respect to the membership, allegedly made recommendations which were ultimately unveiled in mid-2008. And, of course, the key provisions, the key recommendations, the key solutions were that crime and disorder in the African-American community is a mental health issue. Okay.
Yes.
And called for a number of things, including medicating and et cetera. Now, I have examined closely the document released by North Point, first commissioned by them in 2006, actually given to them in 2008, and released by them in 2010, in the midst of one of the more brutal years of murders. There is significant duplication. Now, maybe those who are of a greater mind than we here at On Point can indicate that there is academic justification and ethical justification where you start taking specific whole sentences out of a report from 2009 and some way or another incorporated or vice versa. Okay? Now, either they plagiarized the mayor or the mayor plagiarized their report. Now, in the case of Mayor R.T. Ryback and this report, which was issued in 2009, through the National League of Cities, Institute for Youth Education and Families, there is no reference, if you will, to any information in the mayor's critiquing that indicated that this was lifted from something else. Now, I got to tell you, Mr. Allen, I'm troubled by this.
Yeah. And Mr. Edwards, we have a caller. Caller, you're live on air.
Gentlemen, how you doing?
Doing great.
Real
how
good.
Are
how are you, sir?
Who are we speaking with?
Doing excellent. This is Ralph Crowder. What's happening, brothers? How are y'all?
Oh, Ralph, how you doing, buddy? What's up?
Good. First of all, I want to congratulate you for establishing a strong independent media presence online. I think the different pathways to get out important information is very pertinent to the community. And I think this particular vehicle online will help a great amount of community conversation move forward. I did want to contribute just briefly to what the topic was. It seems like the issue of violence, especially the issue of youth violence, has been kind of connected in a way here on your topics here within the last couple of weeks. And education always seems to come up in that conversation. And I know specifically with the issues that you've been highlighting with the Minneapolis Public Schools, I know there's a specific link that I'm sure both of you might be able to expound on a little bit with the issue of education, particularly black youth in Minneapolis, and the public policy or health issue of violence within the community. It's an issue that I've been exploring here specifically over the last 3 or 4 years, and definitely would like to connect with On Point to go further with some of the issues that you're talking about specifically with funding. And I don't know who's out here, who's the responsible parties for generating obviously the children generate the funds, but as far as the responsible stewards of those funds in the community, I think that's definitely a good conversation to keep on exploring. It's not only just an educational issue, but it pours into other issues that you guys have been dealing with. And so I would like to extend just a brief web link for you guys to check out, and then maybe I can get back up with you and we can talk more specifically about a real specific corruption within the Minneapolis public schools that totals millions and millions of dollars over years. And it seems like the leadership, not only in the community, but also within the school system, has turned their head on a real important federal earmark of money designed to help our children.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mr. Allen, you want to respond on this also?
Well, yeah, I know that that Ralph is at Mr. Crowder's at the forefront of trying to get this information out through his many mediums, and we appreciate any links that you want to send us. We'll put up, we'll get the information out, and we'll diligently go after and try to get these people on the air and hold them accountable. It's very troubling. Like today, Mr. Crowder, I was tapped on the shoulder by a friend, but that friend also happened to be a Hennepin County sheriff who told me at this event that I was not to interview particular panelists because Al McFarland and Ms. Stella Whitney West has instructed him of that. And
oh,
I'm like,
wow, that was pretty deep.
Yeah, yeah. And so
The sheriff.
Deputy sheriff.
It's a brother that I've been knowing for years. He's always at like the Juneteenth events and stuff like that. He's a good guy, and I mean, he's clear on what's going on. He's very clear. I mean, very knowledgeable. But you know what? He's a member of Shiloh, and if they ask him to do something, he's there in uniform. He's going to follow through because he doesn't want to create any waves, and that's one of the troubling things with a lot of the black folks in the community. They don't want to create any way. So they're just going to go ahead and go with the flow, and we're going to vote Don Samuels in a couple of years. We're going to vote Ryback back in. We're going to, Ellison on Tuesday, et cetera, et cetera. So,
Without any real examination, as Mr. Crowder was pointing out earlier, without any real examination of what it is that they're really doing, particularly when you have subject matter issues such as violence and youth violence and et cetera. And as Mr. Crowder just said, when you talk in terms of who the caretakers have been, then we are basically told that it is taboo to raise any question and to examine what has been done with the citizens' monies, if you will. By the way, just for the purpose of transparency, I want to remind some of those locally that when Mr. Crowder in 2008, 2007 began to raise some of these questions, there was an unmerciful attack personal in nature against he and against his family, being orchestrated from 807, which is the headquarters of the Minneapolis Special School District Number 1, and involved members of the board and involved the administration and involved the current administration. And so Mr. Crowder doesn't have to say it. I'm saying it as a co-host here at On Point. And I always felt very badly because I can well remember in 2008, Mr. Crowder put some heck of a presentations together over at the Urban League to really try to call our attention to what was happening in the areas of special education and et cetera. And the next thing I knew, there were these very violent almost and foul attacks upon his character and reputation.
Yeah, if I can also just highlight one thing real quick, and I appreciate you acknowledging that, Brother Edwards. You know, I've been documenting my experience, and to the listening audience, it is very important, just as both of you know, to document. Documentation is powerful. And so I've been documenting my experience in this particular conversation for, you know, the last three or four years. And so real quickly, if I can direct maybe a web link for the listening audience to check out some of things to come. Within the next 2 months, there's going to be a real heavy amount of information, documentation presented in documentary film form and as a special news kind of excerpts utilizing the web and our public access channels here locally and also nationally. So a quick web link to kind of go into some of those issues that Mr. Edwards just talked about is Freedom Radio News, all one word, freedomradionews.blogspot.com. And with that link, you're able to see a preview of the documentary film that I'll be releasing here within the next 3 to 4 weeks. So I will definitely keep On Point aware of this, and I just wanna I don't want to take any more time. But
No. We control these airwaves. What I would like to ask you, Ms. Crowder, please give the website again and even a little bit slower so that those that are sincerely concerned and even the naysayers can access. Please give it to us again.
Okay, I'll do it real slow. Freedom.
Okay.
FREEDOM Radio RADIO News NEWS dot blogspot. That's B as in boy, L as in Larry, O as in off, G as in go, S as in spot. All one word. Blogspot.com. Freedom Radio News dot blogspot.com. Once you get there, you'll be able to go to an exclusive preview of the upcoming Freedom Radio News documentary exploring the crazy amount of corruption within the Minneapolis public schools. And it's going to be an excellent conversation, Mr. Edwards, as well as Mr. Allen. This is not going to be a local conversation, although it will touch definitely local issues. But this will be a national conversation. And and we definitely expect to see some change delivered with this independent media. So I want to congratulate you guys for doing what you're doing. The word and the message of independent media is very important, and I'm definitely checking you all out. So keep on doing what you're doing. Mr. Allen, you know the powers that be are out there, and they don't want the message to get out, but, you know, the message has to get out.
Yeah, so, and I just want to let you know, Mr. Crowder, I just put up a link on our show page there for Freedom Radio. If you refresh your screen, you should be able to see it right away because I just posted it. So if our listeners, national, international, want to go and check out the website, they can definitely just click on the link right there and it'll take them right to the Freedom Radio News, which is a beautiful site. I'm looking at it right now. The big Freedom Radio logo on there, a couple of videos there, documentaries, the previews. And the Freedom Radio Celebrate Life. And you should go check it out again at freedomradionews.blogspot.com.
Okay? All right.
Thanks a lot, brothers. Y'all keep on doing what you're doing.
All right, thank you, Mr. Crowder.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Mr. Allen, let me just say this again for our domestic and international audiences as it pertains to Mr. Crowder. It was when Mr. Crowler, this will not be his first venture into film documentary, if you will. He did a very nice piece, which in fact debuted in a meeting at the Minneapolis Urban League in 08. And it was right after that that I began to see and hear these very vicious attacks against him that became very personal in attacking him and his family and the good work that he had been doing at Washburn and Ramsey, as an example, in South Minneapolis. And it all had to do with the fact that he had raised some serious ethical questions and legal questions about what was going on and how the Minneapolis Public School District was spending money that was supposed to be directed towards the better education of the sons and daughters of the African American. Now, on that particular point, we'd be remiss here on point if we did not also point out that this was a rather interesting week here in our city. An example, on Tuesday night, at the Minneapolis Public School Board meeting at 8:07, the board had to suddenly and quietly announce, and by the way, they allowed no delegations Tuesday night. They suspended that. The district has to pay immediately $17 million in back salary and back compensation to teachers and support staff. My calculations through the National Research Institute is that this puts us a little over $100 million of debt. This school district is now officially $100 million in debt.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
And, you know, again, for transparency, love using that word, and that it's so popular in other quarters, that we extended an invitation 5 weeks ago on this radio program to current Superintendent Bernadette Johnson, and of course she declined. In fact, I think she sent word to you, Mr. Allen, during the occasion that you were there for a meeting at 8:07, that under no circumstances would you have an opportunity to interview her for anything. And we have also sent invitation to her by our radio program, Black Focus, and of course, in our case, we didn't even get the courtesy of a response, though, you know, unofficial sources indicated that Superintendent Johnson did not feel that it would serve any agenda or purpose for her to come on any of our programs and discuss the issues. Now, you remember we had Mr. Allen, your namesake, though his name is spelled differently, was on with us here on Point, and we allowed him 31 minutes and examined him on a number of things. In fact, he was supposed to get back to us with a couple of documents. He and a Mr. Burles, who is the head of construction and project preparation and et cetera, and that information is not forthcoming. But you see, Mr. Allen, you're a much younger man than I am, and so as an old veteran, I can understand that when you start talking about $100 million in debt, mismanagement and et cetera, you know, folks really don't like to come on. Unless, as Mr. Crowler said, it's a situation where the agenda, the discussion, and the questions and the response can be controlled. And that's not going to happen here on Point.
No, not today or tomorrow. Sure ain't.
Yeah, please, if you would, let us, again, for our listening audience, the call-in number, toll-free.
Sure. You can dial
347-426. 3904. Repeat it again. Call in number. Feel free to pick the phone up. 347-426-3904. We've been talking about a multiplicity of things, including one of the largest, well, the largest settlement in the history of the federal or state courts here in Minnesota, $1.8 million to the heirs and the family of Dominic Felter, in which there has been no editorial commentary. There's been no nothing, other than the fact that the Star Tribune had to go with the story because they were covering the trial and had initially expected that there would be an affirmative decision by the jury in support of the police misconduct, and lo and behold, it didn't happen.
Sure didn't. Sure didn't. And a little funny thing about that, you know, Mr. Edwards, I had wrote a story about that the title of the story, I got to have it right here, Police killed Dominic Felter in 2006, and in 2010, the city of Minneapolis paid $1.8 million. Mm-hmm. And I actually took the Minneapolis police patch and put it in a graphic, and the graphic said, Minneapolis police, if you tase us, beat us, disrespect us, or kill us, your city pays.
Right.
And I got a telephone call from Sergeant Jesse Garcia of the Minneapolis Police Department, who told me that I had to take the patch down off my graphic because they have a copyright. It's a copyright infringement. I got kind of tickled by that because, you know, I should have went in and flipped it up, put Minneapolis on the bottom and police on the top, and went and got it copyrighted myself so he couldn't say anything. But you know,
right.
I got a little chuckle at that and thought that would be very interesting that they're paying that close attention, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, and just, you know, so that people are aware that we are very, very familiar with many, many of the principles that are involved in our beloved Shangri-La, our beloved city, is that Sergeant Jesse Garcia was born and raised in North Minneapolis. In fact, he attended North High School.
Mm.
It's 5 o'clock, eh?
Right. In fact, he has a cousin who is a member of the homicide squad of the Minneapolis Police Department.
Uh-huh.
And was a former member of the legendary and notorious and now disgraced Metro Gang Strike Task Force that is under federal investigation. Not Garcia, but his cousin. And so when I see these people taking these kinds of steps, if you will, or trying to initiate this kind of intimidation, I'm just kind of amused, particularly when I know them as well as I do know them. But maybe Sergeant Garcia needs a refresher course in constitutional law. Would you suggest so?
Yes, I would definitely suggest that.
Right. Let me do something. Before we received one of our first calls, Benny, we were talking in terms of, the possibility of plagiarism as it pertains to two interesting documents. One that came out in 2006, the so-called North Community Violence Report, and then the report by the National League of Cities highlighting and praising the mental health issue being driven by Mayor R.T. Ryback. There is a similarity at a couple of the pages, and we would refer you to page 15 and page 13 of the North report, and then we would refer you to page 60 of the League of Cities. And there is a correlation, which I'm quite sure was by accident, in which there's this recommendation, Mr. Allen, you and I talked about it 2 days ago, in which they're talking in terms of having a therapist for each and every individual that is brought in for therapeutic conditioning and et cetera. Remember that?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, exact same language is in both documents.
Oh, no.
Yes, yes. As well as there are a couple of other lines in which the language, the sentence, everything is exactly the same. Now, like I said, I know how important authenticity is to those in the world of academia. In some cases, your tenure as an employee depends upon that. But I'm a little concerned that somebody plagiarized somebody as it pertains to these two reports. Again, we already know about the North report, and Ms. Stella has indicated that you should familiarize yourself as if we have not. But I call your attention again for the fifth time to the State of City Leadership for Family and Children, issued in 2009 by the National League of Cities Institute for Youth Education and Families.
Hmm.
Much of the information in there was apparently taken from the report done in 2006. And by the way, did you ever get any clarification, my friend, on who actually commissioned the four academicians to do this study?
No, I was not informed, nor was that information released to me by Ms. Stella Whitney West.
I see.
So, no.
Do you think that we would be able, I hate to disappoint our listening audience, both national, international and domestic, because, you know, it's just like we thought we would have the architect of the big town hall meeting, Bishop Howell, and, you know, who begged off. But do you think that we could maybe ask one of the county commissioners if they would just kind of give us an indication of how much North Point paid to commission this? Or was it a financial or fiduciary obligation carried by the University of Minnesota? Because the institute, and I want to make sure that I don't misrepresent this, the Institute for the Institute of Domestic Violence in the African American Community, which is located on the St. Paul campus, I mean, I'm just asking you to speculate because we have no empirical data or et cetera. do you think the university footed the bill on this report or what?
I think that there's a lot of hands on it, on the report, and dealing with it. And that's a possibility because, you know, we've been reading a lot of stuff with which has some bad information and some misleading information.
Okay.
ICE report. And, you know, it behooves us, you know, starting, you know, maybe Monday to kind of go through and make some telephone calls and find out how this was financed. You know, how do they get these four people from academia there to do a violence report with information from 2006 and then release it in 2010? Just doesn't make any sense.
I absolutely. Now, a couple of updates, because this is the way we operate here at On Point. We move quickly and decisively, but, of course, if someone picks up the phone and calls us, has a question, we're here to answer. I understand that, well, I don't understand because we jointly have done this. We now have most of the roster of the new charter school that will be coming into North Minneapolis, right?
Yes.
And in fact, we're hearing now that the chairperson of the charter board is someone who resides in Monticello, Minnesota, which is north of us. Again, for our outstate listeners and international listeners, Monticello is a small community north of here. In fact, there's a big power plant in Monticello, and that's what Monticello really has been noted for. But I heard something interesting. I heard that after Group 2 went to Chicago to tour the Noble facility, and the Noble is the name of the charter school complex, right? In fact, they have 10 campuses in Chicago. Am I correct there, Mr. Allen?
Yes, they do.
Mr. Allen handles that computer much quicker than I do. I understand that when the second group went in, a newspaper publisher here in our city took his family with him. But on the manifest, if you will, which shows the delegation that went down, it has both he and his daughter. I now understand that his daughter is now a member of the new charter school board.
Hmm. I wonder how does that happen? You know,
I don't know, because when the first delegation went down in May, which people are, you know, saying we shouldn't be talking about it, that delegation at some point in time was basically told that the reason that the board being the Board of Education, was going to be voting in a couple months, which would have been around June, July, on authorizing, and actually at that point they were saying they even had a facility for the Noble Charter School, there was opportunity for paid positions as well as the prestigious board positions, right? Because I guess the way that you can operate a charter school, you can also compensate your board members, right?
Oh, yes.
And so there was some designation while the delegation was in Chicago in the May review to make known their desires and be looked at for staff and board positions. And then when the second delegation went down, first week in October, it was made known to them that there was a possibility, but that basically for political reasons the slots had been filled up. But we're told maybe certainly one person in that October group was quickly recognized and selected to serve on the charter school board, if you will. Now, there are some who are maintaining that there were members of the public, you know, school board, special district number one, as it's called here, who themselves have been selected as recipients of certain financial considerations as the new charter school comes into being and goes into business.
Hmm.
Okay.
Hey, Mr. Harris, we have go ahead. We have a caller, but they're on hold, so let's go ahead.
No. We can always come back to this. Let's get our callers in, because that's
what we have 21 minutes left to show. Hello, caller, you're live on the air.
Hey, Don, it's Lenny Chisholm here.
Hey, Mr. Chisholm, how are you doing today?
Yeah, pretty fantastic. You guys are having a lively discussion about that charter school. That might be the better discussion to be in on today.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, because, you know, we just think the public has a right to know, and And the charter school, you know, it's kind of like the old hee-haw farmer song, and the charter school will be coming to town, and so it's kind of like a railroad train, I guess, as long as you don't roll up the community or roll over the community. But, yeah, this the charter school is on its way, and I imagine that the headmaster has already been selected. The board has certainly already been selected. And I imagine that quietly applications are being taken for teaching positions and other support positions at the new charter school.
Well, you know, I have a cocktail knowledge about the charter school. And
Talk to us.
I mean,
we have about 17 minutes left. Go ahead.
Yes.
I'm neither for nor against the charter school. I think I've watched how the some of the other ethnic groups have come in and developed their own charter schools. I mean, we have the Spanish immersion Hmong charter schools that are pretty predominant here in the Twin Cities. You also have, and I forget the one that got in a little trouble last year that as far as their funding. I wish I could remember the name of it. So charter
the Native
schools
American community? Or was it the other one? But the Hispanic gentleman was the headmaster.
Yeah, I can't recall.
I think that's the one you're talking about.
I remember it was out near in West St. Paul.
Yeah. Oh, that one. Yeah, right. Okay, go ahead.
So the charter school, I'm not against it. I guess the old segregated schools in the South during that era were charter schools. You know, I guess if that's what you want to call them, because they didn't allow us to go everywhere else, so we had to develop our own school system.
Yeah.
One of the things I think that's important is that as we look at education as somebody as a product of public education, which I think it does, it can do a fine job if given the right resources. And what is that considered? And I remember a few years back there was a local suburban school that got in trouble, and they were near bankruptcy. And one of the things that came to the table was, can we now get more kids to attend our suburban schools? So then they started sending the kids from the inner city to the suburban schools. Thus, those schools no longer are suffering the same elements that the inner city schools are, because they say, well, we got plenty of money now. So the kids took the money. I haven't seen
the money. Yeah, the money goes with the child. Yeah, right.
It goes with the child. Mm-hmm. So the question becomes, to me, if we want to see whether you have a charter school or not, I think you got to figure out a good way to bring in the money that goes with the kids back to the inner city so that we can then have the same abilities to teach our children in the same mannerism that they use.
That's what the Leave No Child Left Behind /Choice/Parent Information Center that is situated, or what's the shell of it, is situated on Plymouth Avenue that no longer functions. See, that's interesting, Mr. Chisholm, because the scenario you just laid out was what was supposed to happen when the NAACP of Minneapolis jettisoned, after some intense politics, and gave up the Parent Information Center to a private group of citizens to run, which that facility is now bankrupt. And you're absolutely on point. Now, Mr. Crawler talked about that in his documentary of 2008, and people just, you know, demonized him. I mean, saying, how dare you come in and expose the graft and corruption? And this is my word. This is not Mr. Chisholm or Mr. Allen, but that's really what it was. And so your point is refreshing again, as was his example, Ms. Walker. Yeah, because I'm trying to understand how come these things aren't working.
And we have another caller that'd like to join in on this.
Let's get him in.
Caller, you're live on the air in the conversation. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Larry Tucker from Minneapolis.
Hey, Mr.
Larry Tucker from Minneapolis.
Mr. Tucker. Oh, okay. Yes, sir. Welcome, Mr. Tucker. Go right in.
Two things. The North High School is not closing. So that is a matter of fact. I have good information to support the fact that North High is not closing. The school board is having secret meetings and trying to find ways to modify their teaching behaviors to make sure that the North High has better products or have better results than they have now. The other thing I want to talk about is the meeting on violence today. Very interesting thing happened. I asked one of the speakers about the statistical data that was employed in the meeting. And when there was election last year, they showed a decrease in crime. And now that this is not a non-election year, they're showing an increase in crime. So I think, and I asked her, did she find any correlation between those events? And she said, well, what does non-election year have to do with statistics supplied by the police department? I went on to ask her, it's imperative that you check out your statistical data before you use your statistical data and make sure that the inputs really reflect what happened. And she said, well, I don't see any correlation between that. Number two, there was no action item out of that meeting today. Everybody left the room doing that 1887 W.E.B. Du Bois's, Booker T. Washington statement that people had made a living outlining the problems of the African-American community for over a couple hundred years now. And I think that has to stop. So I just wanted to comment on those 2 points. North High is not closing. No action item out of the day's meeting. It was sound and fury, signifying nothing, all the sweet nothing.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Tucker.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Oh, we're getting a little feedback. Maybe is it just in my ears or my headset?
Yeah, I just hung up one of the caller, so.
Yes. Oh, I got you. I figured that feature unfortunately happens. Do we still have Mr. Chisholm?
And Mr. Chisholm is live on the air. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Chisholm, continue to move us a little bit with this charter school piece.
Well, you know, one of the things I think we have to look at is the graduation rates, given what they did out of the early, you mentioned the NAACP and how they were involved with that lawsuit. It eventually got the kids to go in anywhere they wanted to go, which wiped out some of that choice program.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I think we have to look at is what was the success rate of the white kids before the minority kids showed up. And I'm not sure if their schools were producing anything greater as far as success rates than the kids that were coming out of the inner city. From my understanding, that the success rate was no better. And now if they went to the schools, their success rate has not improved the kids that were coming out of the inner city, but our expulsion rates have went up.
I was just getting ready to cut in on you and say that, and you just took my thunder away. You're absolutely right. The State Department of Education has really privately and quietly been very concerned about the level of both suspensions and expulsion, with expulsion being, of course, the most serious penalty in that scenario. That's interesting. What, let me ask you this question. And Mr. Allen, what do we have, about 11 minutes, 12 minutes?
Yes, we're down to approximately 12 minutes.
All right. Now, Mr. Chisholm, what is your take on the significant increase of expulsions of African-American students in the suburban schools?
Well, as somebody as a product of the southern environment, as I get on the elevator now, women still clutch their purses, white women.
And lock the doors.
Yeah, they still clutch their purse, lock the doors. You know,
okay.
You still have a hard time getting picked up by cabs in certain areas, you know. So to say that we're going to see something different when they come in the room, there's still a lack of understanding of the difference in our kids. Anything that's shown as aggression in our children often is viewed as a complete negative, and it has been for a number of years. So anytime our children raises their voices, we're considered rebels. And if their children raise their voice, then they're considered, well, speaking their mind. So we have some of these teachers have coming out of these institutions have no understanding of how to deal with urban kids. Urban kids may get loud just because they like to hear their voices louder.
Okay.
So is that necessarily going to make them a bad kid? I don't think so. I mean, what would you think on that, Mr. Edwards?
Oh, I fully concur. In fact, I'd kind of move it even in a broader direction, something you said with respect to how cultural differences are viewed. People better take note, it's no accident these new rules and regulations that have been put into both the, and I know there's a lot of folks out there who enjoy this because this is what they're really into, both the NBA and the NFL, which have initiated significant penalties for celebrations and other kinds of acts. In fact,
technical fouls in the first 19 games of the NBA season, there were 39 technical fouls called, if you will. In the NFL, you now are fined anywhere from $25,000 to $100,000 for excessive celebration. People don't want to understand, Mr. Chisholm, that this is all a part of cultural control based on race.
Right, right.
And so I fully concur what you have said. And it is how police officers, by the way, and it is a person who served for 5 years on the Department of Justice is mandated police community relations. We had many, many arguments, particularly in 04, 05, and 06, about how police officers, particularly white officers, were being trained in departments in the Twin Cities with respect to how to deal with Negro suspects. So you are absolutely on point, sir, but that'll be a discussion for another time.
Well, you know, I'll tell you one of the things that, and I'm going to get off here because I know you guys got to wrap up, but one of the things that's surprising to me is that if we aren't able to have our young men and women in these school systems be able to speak their minds sometimes, we've always been taught that we should be the most cordial individuals in the room. Mm-hmm. We should never be able to raise our voices. Don't look them in the eye. Those are old teachings and old things. And that's really what's coming out of some of these calls in the NBA and some of the other. We have, and so when you look at these schools and the expulsion rates and suspension rates, I notice that even today, if I walk in the room and I speak too boisterous, a lot of people will become concerned that I'm being overly aggressive and I'm not speaking in the right tones to people who are supposed to be in charge, you know, in other words, white folks. And I go, well, you know, that's been done to us. And so we have a gene that's been bred out of our society and for us as African-American men, women, et cetera, has literally been bred out of us.
And so by the way, I have to say this so that people understand that we as African-Americans understand the metaphors, the psychological thing, et cetera. Mr. Chisholm, you're a rather large, young African-American, aren't you?
Well, you know, I'm 6 feet. You know, I'm over 200 pounds. So
there you go. You're a little bit more than
6 feet.
You're probably around 6'2 and a half, probably a good solid 265, 270. You understand?
And
so, you know, like you said earlier, it's not only when you get on the elevator, but sometimes when you're walking across the crosswalk and that car is stopped there, and there's the family, white family there. You hear the doors, you hear the locks on the doors click, don't you?
Hey,
and as a matter of fact, go ahead.
You know, Mr. Edwards, it's funny that you say that because just 2 days ago, I'm downtown. I'm wheeling my little suitcase behind me. I have a suit and tie on. I cross the first intersection. Here, bang, 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 bang. These doors lock. I look. There's a white lady in the car. So you know,
right.
I didn't let it get to me. And so I'm going cross street. I'm crossing at 7th and Nicollet Mall, and you know, I'm nowhere. I'm not even thinking about this lady in the car. And I'm crossing. I hear this door lock. Click, click. I got so upset. I knocked on her window, and I said, hey, it's not bulletproof.
Now, you understand, though, Mr. Allen, under current law, that was a terroristic threat.
Yes, yes.
And
well,
you're lucky. You know, you're lucky we... I think it's a compliment to us as African Americans that three black men, all good sized, if you will, we're all three of us good sized men, that we can actually laugh about this, though deep down there's a pain. Okay.
Yes.
But the fact that we can laugh about this, and that goes to the heart of what you were talking about earlier, Mr. Chisholm, about how a kind of a DNA has been stripped from us. Going back to the days of slavery, that we keep our eyes down, keep our head down. If we got a hat, we take it off, hold it in our hand, and et cetera. And that's why I use this analogy that, you know, some of the folks out there, you white folks, got to feel kind of good about the fact that we can laugh about it. Okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're not Amos and Andy, but we can still laugh about it because if you didn't, probably do something to somebody.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. And that's why.
All
right,
we
got to
wrap. We got to wrap. Mr. Chisholm, we appreciate it.
Okay, you guys have a wonderful day now.
Hey,
all right,
you
do the same, sir.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
Mr. Allen, we need to do this, if you will. What are we down to? 4 minutes?
6 minutes. 6 minutes.
6 minutes. Okay, hey, and we won't have to worry about getting any calls because we're on wrap up. But I got to tell you, next Saturday after the game, well, the game will be played tomorrow. I tell you, one of the greatest fiascos, and it kind of ties to what Mr. Chisholm, Mr. Crawler, Ms. Walker, and others have been talking about as our call-ins, and we really appreciate that. This Brett Favre sham is as much as one can take, except the race card is being played. The attacks that the white media are leveling on Tarvaris Jackson's reputation,
yes,
and crying and whining. Now, they would rather put a crippled white man out there on the field under the ball in Foxborough, New England tomorrow, or Foxborough, Massachusetts, and lose and basically kill their chances at a playoff than sign off and support an African-American as quarterback. Now, I don't understand the psyche. Yeah, yes, I do. I'm telling the story.
Yeah.
You know, what's the difference? Because you want to give the ball to Adrian Peterson and have him run 27 times for 150 yards. That's okay. But you don't want Tarvaris Jackson under the center taking the ball and being the commander. Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
I got to tell you, Mr. Allen, there's something sick about that. Now, you want to talk about mental health problems? Analyze that for me.
Yeah, that's a straight-up mental health problem. I just want to also, Mr. Edwards, we're wrapping up here, on Wednesday, November 3rd, that's next week coming up, there's going to be a discussion. We were involved, Mr. Edwards, with a group of black educators downtown Minneapolis for a meeting, and one of the principals of a local school here came up to me and handed me, actually emailed me, I should say, some information. They're having a very serious discussion about closing the achievement gap Wednesday, November 3rd, at Kagan Commons on the McAllister College campus. Everyone's invited. The Kagan Commons is on the corner of Grand Avenue and Snelling in St. Paul. It starts at 4:30 p.m. with a reception, and the panel discussion starts promptly at 5 p.m. So I promised the principal, Ms. Thomas, that I'd get that information out for her. And also, starting November 1st, which is Monday, the University of Minnesota is having a hip-hop workshop for hip-hop entrepreneurs. They're inviting Minneapolis Public School students from ages 14 to 21 to come out and be a part of this. And so I just wanted to slide that in there with 3 minutes left.
Okay.
And I'd also like to let people know tomorrow, if you live in Minneapolis, watch Minneapolis Television Network at MTN Channel 17. Mr. Edwards' show, Black Focus, will be on at 5 p.m. And don't forget about his column in the Spokesman Recorder. Comes out weekly on Wednesdays. Mr. Edwards' column there. Just great stuff coming out. And also make sure you continue to read the Independent Business News Network. On Monday, I am going to cover in detail what happened and kind of put some people on point. Excuse the pun.
All right. One other announcement as we wrap it. There will be an all-day session at St. Thomas. And I'm fair to show it's the Minneapolis campus. You need to call St. Thomas and clarify corroborate. There will be an all-day conference on hate crimes.
Okay.
And my understanding is that this apparently is being pushed by the Department of Justice. And the real undercurrent is the number of hate crimes that have just skyrocketed here in the Twin Cities against Somalis and others of the Asian, excuse me, of the Islamic persuasion. All-day session on hate crime at St. Thomas, the Minneapolis campus, we're fairly sure. We'll try to report on some of that next Saturday. But we got to wrap. Mr. Allen, you can wrap us up.
Okay, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to On Point today on October 30th. Want everyone to have a safe and happy Halloween. Those that are trick-or-treating tonight on Saturday and then tomorrow on Sunday. We'll be back next Saturday at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. We invite you to tune in, call in, and participate. If you have any important news or information, you can email that to ibnnnews@gmail.com. We'll be glad to get that stuff routed and followed. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Just let me see. Look, this isn't a Romulan labor camp. I don't have to answer your questions. I don't give a damn what you think.